Today is our executive business leader feature, and we catch up with a smart chap who has an actuarial science degree as well as a BSc honours in the advanced mathematics of finance. His career has taken him across the spheres of finance, and he now sits at the helm of an energy company with green credentials. He's a CEO of Renergen, which recently dual listed on the Australian Stock Exchange, and he joins me now in studio to tell us about his journey, what drives him, and where to next. We're talking to Stefano Marani, the CEO of Renergen. Thanks very much for joining us, sir.
Thank you very much for having me on radio, and thank you to your listeners.
Super. Stefano, before we get into your background, just let us get into the Renergen story a little bit. As I mentioned, you guys are an energy company, but please expand on what Renergen does, when it was started, and so on.
So we listed as the first special purpose acquisition company on the JSE in 2015, or otherwise known as a SPAC. And we used those proceeds to then acquire the country's first and only onshore petroleum production right. The gas asset in question sits in the Free State. It's about 1,800 square kilometers, roughly, covering the towns of Welcome, Virginia, and Tennyson. Now, what we've been doing since 2015, we ceased being a SPAC and we became a fully operational company in November 2015. Since then, we have been doing all of the analysis and the requisite feasibility studies aimed at building the country's first commercial onshore LNG plant, as well as the country's first helium liquefaction facility.
Super. All right, LNG sounds fancy. Just break it down to everyone. What does it stand for?
It stands for liquid natural gas. Now, this is just to be absolutely crystal clear. It's very different from the thing that you go and buy in bottles down at your local petrol station. That is LPG. That goes into your heaters. That's liquid at normal room temperature, just a little bit of pressure. LNG is in fact methane. It's methane cooled down to minus 162 degrees Celsius. Mm-hmm. So very, very chilly.
And it's a clean energy.
It's extremely clean. It's widely regarded as the bridging fuel between fossil and completely renewable energy.
Mm. And previously, South Africa, well, not even previously, right now, South Africa is a net importer of LNG. So once you get up and running, that's going to be quite a good space for you.
Yes. So right now, we import all of our gas in the form of natural gas. So not liquid, but in the form of natural gas through the Romco pipeline from Mozambique. As it stands right now, the country does not have any LNG whatsoever.
Hmm.
There's a smattering of it in a plant down in Mossel Bay, but it's not commercially available.
Right.
This would be the country's first commercially available LNG, as in liquid form, in energy density.
Excellent. All right. So that's a sweet spot right there. So let's rewind and learn more about you and where you started in life. Just tell us a bit about your upbringing, the where, and your educational journey.
Yeah, sure. So, born in a tiny little town in Mpumalanga called Standerton, then went to boarding school, finished up my schooling career at Bryanston High here in Joburg,
mm-hmm.
Then went off to do my, first I was going to be an actor, bizarrely enough.
You've got the looks for it.
you're too kind, but you lie very well. I've got the face for radio. And someone told me that I needed a bit of job stability and couldn't go into acting. So I went alphabetically, and actuarial was after acting. So I did an actuarial degree. I must have been Christmas in my third year. I looked around the Christmas table and realized that I knew the life expectancy of every single member of the family. I thought that it was way too morbid a career to go into. So I dropped that, and I did an honors in advanced maths of finance.
Yes, that's excellent.
Got into banking. My first post was with Deutsche Bank. They transferred me through to New York. I got to work on Wall Street. That was incredible.
I can imagine. How old were you then?
I was 21,
wow.
And I was in the peak of the dot-com bubble on Wall Street.
Wow, what a time to be alive.
It was just amazing.
So in terms of these qualifications that you did get, did you have to, I mean, were you quite academically inclined, or did you have to really work very hard to attain?
I finished last in my class. Yeah, you were very kind in saying that that I was very smart. I think the only smart thing I did in my academic career was to realize I needed to change out of actuarial science because it was way too hard.
So you've talked about your experience at Deutsche Bank, and obviously you are the head or the CEO of Renogen, but you also have interests in companies called Kigeni Holdings and Molopo. What do those businesses do?
When I left my career in banking at Morgan Stanley, I left Morgan Stanley to open up my own financial services firm along with my partners. And Kigeni focused on specifically doing project preparation funding and project finance for projects in Africa. We hit the ground running. We closed a couple of deals early. That company's gone from strength to strength. And then I agreed with Gavin and Eric at some point that I was going to step away from the business to focus on the gas fields.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an amicable arrangement, and we parted ways.
Yes.
But still very pleased to know that that Kigeni is doing some fantastic things along with its partners, and it's really grown into its own. So well done to the guys. Molopo is actually, it's the gas field. We renamed it from Molopo to Tetra 4. So Tetra 4 is now the major subsidiary to Renogen. So
okay.
It's in fact the same project.
Super. So you serve as a member of the International Advisory Council at APQ Global. What's that all about?
So one of my former colleagues from Morgan Stanley, a chap called Bart Turtleboom, very, very smart individual, he went off and started up his own firm in the UK, listed it on the UK Stock Exchange, and once a quarter, it's the advisory council, we dial in once a quarter and we just share economic views on our respective regions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally just that. It's just a platform to share some ideas on.
Excellent. So in your business leadership journey, what are some of the factors you hold dear in terms of being able to run a productive and successful operation?
Wow. Make sure that the people that you employ around you are much better than you are.
That's smart.
there's a lot to that. There really is a lot to that. The people around you are critical, and you need to be able to rely on people. The one thing that's also very important is, if you're going to get anywhere, then you can't be micromanaging. You need to be freed up to be able to do a lot of the big picture stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Stakeholder engagement is critical. You need to keep everyone abreast all the time of what's happening. Make sure that there are no surprises around the corner. And get people involved the sooner the better, particularly when you're facing some challenges.
Yes.
The sooner people know that you have challenges, the sooner you can all get together and do something about it as quickly as possible.
We know that issues around governance and ethics have really plagued us here in South Africa, both in the public and the private sector. How important are these issues for you as you lead your business?
Governance is important. It doesn't matter whether you're big or whether you're small. Good governance is critical, especially when you're dealing with other people's money.
Yes.
Our approach to it is obviously trying the best we can to adopt to all of the King Four principles, making sure that we've crossed the T's, we've dotted the I's, we all check each other's work, and it's just a common sense test, really.
Yes.
And in banking, we used to call it the Financial Times test. If what you're doing had to end up on the front page of the Financial Times, how is it going to be perceived?
And that's a good test.
It's just common sense.
Yeah.
It's common sense and accountability.
Absolutely. And just to end with the Renogen business side of things, you've been listed on the Alternative Exchange of the JSE, as you mentioned, from 2015. But then recently, as I mentioned, you decided to dual list on the Australian Stock Exchange while your assets, are here in South Africa. What was the rationale behind that? And as I understand it, you managed to get more investors in than you anticipated.
The Australian side of it was particularly successful. So the critical thing for us is, being listed on the JSE, we're in quite a lonely space over here. And the reason that we're in such a lonely space is because from an oil and gas perspective, there are really not that many listed oil and gas companies. And I'm not talking about the likes of Sasol, which we see more as a diversified chemicals company.
Yeah.
We're talking about the pure upstream explorers like us. And probably with the exception of Ephora Energy, which also doesn't have assets in South Africa, we're the only one locally listed with onshore assets in South Africa. That means that there's no research available on us. Our market cap being, you know, the 1.2, 1.3 billion rand mark means that we're also, you know, we're also at the very bottom end of the micro cap.
Mm-hmm.
The JSE, by representation, the companies over here are extraordinarily large relative to other stock exchanges.
Yes.
So we don't get that much exposure and we don't get that much liquidity over here as a result. Whereas by contrast, you look at the Australian Stock Exchange and it's completely set up for small cap companies. They've got a very vibrant oil and gas sector. I believe that they've got over 460 companies listed in the oil and gas sector.
Wow.
And all upstream explorers doing similar things to what we're doing. So the sector understands that industry. And as a result of that, and particularly given the angle, the whole helium, and in particular our helium concentration and the helium crisis going on globally, and our concentrations being what they are, there was a lot of interest, particularly in the retail side, on the Australian in the Australian investor base, and that that saw us being oversubscribed by almost 30%.
Wow!
And we added, I believe, something like 400, almost 500 shareholders to the register.
Okay,
so it was a successful transaction.
So before I did ask you about LNG, and you nicely gave us the distinction between that and LPG, helium. For me, I just remember as a child going to a fun place, a circus or whatever, and then I was asked to suck in the air of a helium balloon, and I was talking funny, and that's what I've always associated helium with. What are the applications of helium, and how big of a game changer is that going to be for you?
So, yeah, you're right. It does make your voice squeaky. And for any of the listeners that are interested, there's that YouTube video going around of helium beer. I hate to dispel the myth, but that's not true. You cannot make helium beer. But aside from that, so no, we're not going to be making helium beer anytime soon. The main purpose for helium is it's quite a critical industrial gas. The biggest home for helium is MRIs. So in the medical industry, you can't run MRIs, you can't run CAT scans, and you can't make these machines without helium in the first place, with the result that it's critical to the medical industry. And that uses roughly about a quarter of the world's helium market. But then you also can't make cell phones, you can't make TVs, you can't make microchips, you can't make fiber optic cables, and there's no substitute, but you cannot make these things without it. And then obviously you get the really exciting, sexy stuff, like you cannot launch a rocket into space without helium. And to give you an example, in September last year, NASA attempted to, well, they launched the rocket to the sun.
Yes.
And it was delayed by, I believe it was 2 weeks, because NASA, of all companies, did not have helium.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so it's a pretty important gas, and it has no substitute whatsoever.
Wow.
And the world is running up.
So they could potentially, NASA could potentially be one of your clients going forward.
No comment.
Okay. Thanks very much, Stefano, for coming in studio and chatting to us. That was Stefano Marani. He's the CEO of Renogen.